You've been a really lousy host, but I'm still a little woozy from my head injury.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Plays. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 23, Too Romantic for Words. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. We're about to get to our Patreon teases, but first, Melrose Place has another two-part episode coming up, which means we have another call-in episode coming up on our end, but this one has a twist. With season six ending and just one more Melrose season to follow, we want you to tell us what you'd like us to cover on this podcast, episode by episode, once all the Melrose Place has run out.
Yes, we have our own running list. Your suggestions, we should say, do not have the force of law. But honestly, that only means you should use this opportunity to, like, shoot the moon and get weird with it, because we may want to get weird too. You never know.
It's true. You don't. We will be taping this call-in episode the week of June 4th. So consider your options and or just go ahead and call or text anytime a new candidate crosses your mind. That number is 210-920-4699. That's 210-920-HO-99. You can also email us a voice memo at hello@againwiththispodcast.com.
You can and you should. Now for Patreon, this week, episode 146 drops June 2nd. Let's watch Anne Gillespie in Amanda's. What a weird show. Coming straight off Suddenly Susan, I picked a couple of real strange choices. So we're going to be discussing season one, episode 5, titled My Cheatin' Staff. It is on YouTube. We will link it in the show notes. It's from 1983. My God.
So yes, that will be in the show notes in case you want to watch along with us. And the big edition of Again With Them drops Thursday, June 1st. You should never want to listen along with us for this one. This is our monthly recap digest of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 902 and OMG. They interviewed a guy named Bo Jesse. They're crawling to the end of the Brenda years, and Amy can't stop asking questions that are clearly designed to get her co-host to shit talk Shannon Doherty and the 1.5 feet she had out the door at this point in show history. Surely all of this is worth kicking up your pledge, since Again With Them is a perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. Listen to that and us, never to them.
Yeah, we should also say it's mostly Jenny's podcast this month because they are, of course, taping through Tori's hospitalization for her black mold issues, and we'll get into that as well. Join us at againwiththispodcast.com/club for all of the archives. And now, too romantic for words. Sure, let's start with our B plot. Jeff gets even more serious about getting serious with Sam. We rejoin Billy and Jennifer in the hotel room the morning after they fucked, as Billy wakes up into a horrified realization of that. Jennifer purrs that last night was magical and it changed things, and he chuckles rudely as he said it meant a lot to him too, but he is still married and he feels bad that he doesn't feel worse, basically. And when he says he has to find Sam, Jennifer advises him not to tell her anything. He cannot go straight to San Diego to find her anyway because Jennifer's currently wearing his shirt. And she thinks they can just go back to the complex and act like it never happened. And we hear this clip too.
I just don't want to look back on this as a bad thing.
I mean, it was a bad thing while you were doing it, probably.
I'd be surprised if it were memorable enough for that, honestly. It really is amazing. Like, Andrew Hsu is making every wrong face. Like, he is trying every face he has, which granted is not a lot, but he's like throwing a bunch of faces at it. Mm-hmm. None of them correct. Mm-mm. He had a good run there a few episodes ago. That's over. And Alyssa Milano is like actually good in this role. And it is very striking to see, like, you forget how bad Billy is when he's in scenes with Sam, because they're both bad. But then Alyssa Milano is almost selling you on the idea that it's not Billy, or that it's Billy is not so boring, but it's, oh God, I just really feel for her.
Yeah.
honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah, same thing we often felt with Courtney Thorne Smith. Not only that, but she was also playing such a whiny, boring character for most of the time, too, and she was better than that as well. But at least Jennifer, like, this is some bad judgment, but the character is kind of fun otherwise for all of the same reasons that Sydney was in her day, as we've said many times. Anyway, he finally agrees this moment can just be private. Over to the hotel in San Diego, Jeff lists all the breakfast food that he ordered, so I at least am seduced, and you can see the spread in the visual aids. He gets back into bed, and Sam, who looks completely unconflicted, says she has everything her heart desires. And then he says he can't wait until she's Mrs. Jeff Baylor, and that makes her realize what's actually going on. And she climbs out of bed, says she should eat or call Billy. Jeff loves her more than anyone in his entire life, and she's like, sure, sure, but then calls home and gets the machine. And in the apartment, the camera pans from the blinking answering machine message light to the happy couple's wedding portrait, which, as we recall, they kind of weren't really on the day.
No.
But, yeah, it's not subtle. We get it. So they've been unhappy for, like, half a season. So Megan's heading out to work as Billy returns to the courtyard, trailed by Jennifer in her gown from the gala. So obviously Megan can guess what has happened, so she better get to the practice and tell someone this hot gossip, in my opinion. But instead, she follows Jennifer back to her place to get more details. Also solid. After Jennifer's told her what we already know, Megan says you never want to be the third person in a marriage, even though that is literally how her own character was introduced on this show. Jennifer says she knows for a fact that she loves Billy a lot more than Sam does, but declines to say how she knows that. And just then, Sam calls to hear what happened at the awards, although she only cares about who won. And when she hears that the agency won, we get this, clip three.
Oh, that's great. That's really great. All right, we need to throw Billy some kind of celebration. He needs to feel appreciated. And you should come, too. We'll throw him a thing downstairs from the office. After all, you took my place last night.
Yeah, I guess I really did take your place.
Not bad. Not bad.
No.
But there already was a thing to make Billy feel appreciated. It was the awards banquet where he got the awards.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
But when Jennifer's hung up, Megan says Jennifer will never take Sam's place. Rude. And when Megan's gone, Jennifer tells herself things happen, and they do. And then we're at the party that Sam slapped together in Billy's honor. Clip four.
So these awards, more than anything else, are a testament of Billy Campbell's leadership. I mean, of course, with Amanda's guidance. But in the end, it's Billy that we have to thank for the prestige that he's brought to our company. Amanda, would you like to say a word?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, I know that we're supposed to think that Amanda is being a pill because she's like wound up in survivor's guilt or whatever from the Christine plotline, but
yes,
this is how she always used to act when people were being like weird at the office. And I love it.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Totally. Right then is when Jennifer enters in a boob-forward tank top, just in time to hear Sam call Billy the number two man at the company and the number one man at her heart. He's number two, all right. And Billy and Jennifer make eye contact and look queasy about it. Oh, Jennifer, why did you go to this thing?
Yeah, really.
The next night, Jennifer's tending bar at the jazz club when Sam and her mohair crocheted cardigan show up.
I'm sorry, where is she tending bar?
Excuse me. The jazz club. Sam obliviously unloads on Jennifer. She soon gets to Jeff's quasi-marriage proposal, babbling that she doesn't know what to do. Clip five.
Do you really want to know what I think?
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
Okay, I think it's time that you make a choice. I mean, even though Billy doesn't know what's going on, he's got to be feeling that something's wrong, and it's got to be hurting him.
I don't want to hurt him. I don't want to hurt Billy. I don't want to hurt Jeff. I don't want to hurt anybody.
Well, the only way to stop is to leave.
What are you saying?
You want to know what I think? I think you should leave Billy. I think it'd be best for both of you.
Why stop there? Leave the whole show. You're a fucking bore and an ass as well.
Leave the state. Leave. Leave our sight. Please.
There are crabs who need you.
Yes.
Beat it.
Also, how many times does Jennifer need to say, you should leave Billy in those words? Because it's multiple times in that clip alone.
Yeah.
Sam being like, what do you mean? What do you think she
means?
What she said?
You know your husband, Billy? You should leave him. What do you mean? You should no longer be married to Billy, your husband. What do you mean?
What are you getting at?
That would actually be, that sort of like Zucker Abrams approach to this scene would be 1,000 times more interesting than the actual plot line, which I feel like it's been going on since the 1800s.
Yes.
Decide.
I mean, speaking of Zucker Abrams, deja vu all over this thing. Anyway, the next day, Jeff calls Sam at work. He knows he freaked her out, but it doesn't change the fact that they belong together and he needs to see her. Meanwhile, Billy's in a conference room with Amanda, bitching about his marriage. He and Sam started drifting apart after the wedding. Correction, as we already said, at the wedding.
During the wedding, before the wedding.
Through most of the reception.
Yeah.
But now Sam's all over him again, and it doesn't feel real. Amanda doesn't let her own problems, which we will get to, color her response. Just kidding, she totally does. Clip 6.
I wouldn't worry about it too much. I mean, marriage is unnatural anyway. You're born alone, you die alone. Anything else is make-believe.
How can you say that? You just got married.
Because it's true. At least for me.
Ah, listen, that was a local glazed out rep, and she needs to see me right away. But I will redo the artwork and have it on your desk first thing in the morning, okay?
If it's okay with Billy.
Sure, that's okay.
Great, thanks. I'll see you later.
Sounds awfully excited to go see a porcelain company rep, wouldn't you say?
Maybe she's lying. Maybe she's not. Tell you the truth, I don't care.
You know, I forgot I have a lunch too. See you later.
Whatever.
Exactly. It us.
Yes, make a friend. Go hang out with the friends you're always getting drunk with off screen at whatever place is not Shooters. Like, this is not Amanda's job, frankly.
Also, who decided to give Andrew Hsu the line porcelain company rep? That shit is just mean.
And then we're at lunch with Sam and Jeff. They're out on a patio. He has her hand in both of his and is hectoring her. Clip 7.
I know how we feel about each other. I mean, and these are deep feelings, Sam. It's a big deal. You can't just brush it away.
Believe me, Jeff, I've missed you. Everything about you and the way that you look at me and your eyes. I just don't know what to do.
I do.
Oh, come on, we have to be careful. Somebody might see us.
See, that's just it. I am sick to death of being careful. And I know you are, too. So come on, stop letting guilt run your life and kiss me right now like you mean it in front of God and everybody.
So she does, and again, the way that Brooke Langton is conveying her extreme horniness for this guy is she comes at him with her mouth open like 270 degrees. Like, it's so wide.
Also, we have to be careful. Like, you're already having lunch with him. You're already draped over him like he's a chaise.
Yes.
Idiot.
Yes.
And her line delivery is just so unconvincing. On every level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that she's horny.
No.
I don't believe she even likes him.
No.
I don't believe she read her lines until 2 minutes before they set the shot up. She's so bad. It's like anger making at this point.
Mm-hmm. Cut to Jennifer's place because Billy's lunch is in fact a boner he wants to stick in her, which she knows, yet she breathlessly offers him a sandwich while she waits for him to get on with it.
I mean, sandwich and a nooner? Come on.
Right.
Billy, what are you doing?
Yes. So he blahs that he saw how upset she was at Sam's party and he didn't want her to be upset. And she's touched by his consideration. And when he tries to go, she tonguefully kisses him. But that's as far as it goes for now. They're going to talk later. Oh, boy, more talking about this. Can't wait.
He doesn't even take the sandwich. Come on, writers. Jesus, do you want us to buy into this storyline or not?
On to the A-plot. Everyone sure got over Sydney in a hurry, but somehow we're still talking about friggin' Christine all the time. Also, the Coopers and their current partners are whatever. Amanda's at her desk fiddling with a ring when Kyle saunters in and snits that she cannot avoid him forever. They are married. She agrees that's an unpleasant fact for him because she doesn't think he sees her as she really is. He lists all the reasons he loves her, which only irritates her since she remembers him already saying he thinks that Christine's death is her fault. When she kicks him out, he demands one date and agrees to leave her alone if she says she will go. So she does and takes off her ring as he leaves. Over to the beach house, Michael's on his way out. Taylor's sitting in what is now apparently a sofa bed, which never was before. I also think that after it got, like, set on fire in that one episode, it's, like, the same one again. They just went back to the store and got the same copy.
Probably.
Got an upgrade the same time the kitchen did, I guess. But he says it's time for her to go. She would love to, but she's still woozy from her head injuries, we heard up top. He knows she was running on the beach yesterday, which according to the timeline was the day she woke up at the clinic, but fine. She's also still afraid Nick is out there planning to try to kill her again. And Michael's like, some people have real problems, like me with my sketchy medical clinic that's failing. Does not say, I told him you were dead, so he's probably not looking for you or even in town anymore. But Taylor knows her problems are her own fault. Michael can't send her out to be beaten to death by a trained killer, however, which is a rude way to describe an ex-troop, and yet it's Nick, so I get it. She asks Michael to go see if it seems like Nick is still at the motel, and Michael bitterly agrees, but he will need someone to cover the clinic and calls the practice to get Megan to do it. Like, cover it how? It's a walk-in clinic. Like, people aren't coming in to make appointments to return later.
Yeah. God.
She also doesn't want to help Michael since she set up a meeting for him with Peter and he never showed because of Taylor, as we know, and she doesn't. Michael whines that there were complications and begs on behalf of the neighborhood residents. That night, Peter walks Lexi home after their date. So I guess she's still living with Coop, unclear, but they are happy. She pulls him inside kissing. Cut to the clinic, still open late enough for Peter and Lexi to have had an entire date and be fucking now. Michael breezily calls Megan babe as he thanks her. She says she is not his babe, and then Coop strolls out for the back saying the day was only saved because she called him in, and this kicks off, conservatively, the 5,000th pissing match between Coop and Michael. Megan takes a lot longer to get sick of it than I personally did, and when she finally says she and Coop are leaving, Michael wants to thank her with a drink. Coop slams against a wall, only letting go when Michael calls him unstable. Time for another ultimatum. If Megan cannot shake Michael loose, Coop doesn't know what'll happen between the two of them. Over to the Jazz Club, where Jennifer's annoyed at Kyle asking her every 2 minutes if she's seen Amanda, who has not shown up for the promised date. And so he goes to his office to call Amanda. And clip 8.
Hello.
Yeah, it's Kyle. Can I talk to Amanda?
Oh, hi, Kyle. Yeah, she's right here. We're burning the midnight oil.
Amanda does a no.
You know what? She just stepped out. She's, with a rep. She had a late meeting with a rep.
You're a crappy liar, Samantha. She's sitting right there, isn't she?
No, honest.
Uh-huh. Well, tell her she doesn't have to go to all the trouble. I knew she was lying the whole time.
I'm sorry, I didn't know you guys were having trouble.
Forget about it. Let's get back to work.
So he said he always knew you were lying. He sounded kind of hurt. What's happening?
I've changed my mind. You can go home.
Oh, come on, Amanda. We're friends.
I don't have any friends anymore, and I don't need you poking around my life. I mean, aren't you busy with your affair and your own lies? If I were you, I'd pay attention to that, because it'd be a shame if it got out and blew up in your face.
Are you threatening me?
Just some friendly advice.
Yeah, like anyone would bother threatening you. You're such a moron that you'll hoist yourself with your own whatever soon enough. Also, shut up. I'm actually really starting to hate Samantha instead of finding her boring. I'm not sure why.
Mm-hmm. She's tiresome. I mean, part of it is not, like, Brooke Langton is a bad actor, but part of it is not her fault. Mm-hmm. Like, they are spinning out this nothing story for way too long. Way too long.
Yep.
So the next morning, Peter wakes up with Lexi in her bed, I guess. Lexi is now in her own apartment, even though she's rich, and she decided she wants to stay in this dump in Coop's former place. Coop having at some point moved into what was originally the Jane and Michael apartment. I had to go back to that fandom page and, like, retrack who lives where. I'm going to link it again in the show notes because it's like impossible to track any of this. We never see them moving. They just are wherever they are. But anyway.
Also, is Craig's apartment, Craig was in Jake's apartment. Also, no. Remember Craig?
No, Craig was in Jane and Michael's apartment, which is where Coop and Megan are now.
Okay.
Taylor is in Jake's apartment. That's what I thought.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
And Lexi is in the former Matt apartment, which Matt gave to Coop. Why didn't Coop just stay in his place? I don't know. It's all dumb. Anyway.
Why didn't Coop just stay in Cleveland? I hate everyone on this show except Amanda and Jennifer at this point.
Yes, it's true. Anyway, Peter's horrified to see he slept in until 8:30. Lexi can show up at her fake job whenever to do nothing. So she sex kittens around while Peter ignores her and lists all the shit he has to do all over town. And that's when Coop returns to needle Peter for doing exactly what Coop asked him to do in the last episode, which is get back together with Lexi so that Coop was not tempted to try to make her marry him for the money. And then Amanda returns from a run, telling Peter he better not be planning to move back in because she doesn't allow dogs, which is kind of rude because all of the units we've seen are tiled. Perfect place for a dog, in my opinion. But that's when Kyle runs into Amanda, clip 9.
Got some exercise, huh? That's a good sign.
No, just torturing myself.
You know, if you're not coming to the club last night was to make a point, you made it. But I want you to understand something. No matter what you do to hurt me or how much you try to hide from me, you and I are married forever, and nothing you do can change that.
Don't bet on it.
Stop being a creep.
Yeah. Also,
go away. You're being weird.
And as you said in the last podcast, they probably have perfect grounds for annulment, even leaving aside the corpse desecration. Like,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure they have not consummated the marriage, you know?
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, I don't think they did. I think you're right.
Because she was getting splat and that's where they were on the wedding night.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Like, Amanda, just go to Reno. It's fine.
Yeah. At the practice, Coop brings Megan champagne and toasts to her, listing a bunch of positive attributes that ends with the most compassionate woman in the world. It's not quite their 5-month anniversary, which is crazy to hear because it feels like it's been 5 years. But just as I'm thinking they're pretending he did not issue her an ultimatum very recently, clip 10.
What's really going on here?
You haven't said anything about my little explosion at Michael's clinic.
Oh, come on. It gets on my nerves, too. Believe me, I understand.
It's more than that. I love you, Megan. I do. And I get nuts when I see him trying to pull you back in. And that is what he's trying to do. But still, I shouldn't flip out like that. And then I feel you tense up this morning when we walked past Lexi.
Oh, come on. It's a little knee-jerk jealousy, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly my point. We've got too many relationship ghosts around us.
There's not much we can do about that.
Well, actually, I'm working on something that might fix everything, but I don't want to tell you about it until I know more.
What is it, some kind of murder plot or something?
Well, crossed my mind, but it's way too messy. Anyway, right now, to you, to our future, and to my promise to quit being such a short-tempered jerk.
You're not a jerk. You're gorgeous. Inside and out.
Overruled. Although he is sort of, like, something about his line delivery in this episode, and particularly in that scene, he's going for, like, a Calabro line delivery that's like, I don't want to find him, not charming, but, like, less boring.
Yeah.
But if that's the angle, it's a good one. It kind of works. And he's like, well, I don't want it. Like, just kind of overacting and being funny. And it's like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Coop.
Listener,
we'll take you off the LVP board this once, but don't get comfortable.
Okay, listener, who are not in the Patreon, we have to admit part of this is that we recently found out that Lyndon Ashby and Susan Walters, who played Christine, are married in real life, like, were married at this time, have been married for, like, decades. and we now follow them on Instagram, and they're cute. Like, they're a cute couple. He kind of looks better now with, like, a little crag, as Sarah put it. So, like, this is also, this is affecting, at least my, I shouldn't speak for you. It's affecting my view of the character where, like, okay, fine, now that I know you're okay in real life, I don't hate you as much. He is still boring, though.
I mean, and they're, like, they're basics. And if we spent five minutes with them, it would just be like, oh, hashtag actors, am I right? I'm going to go. And then I would leave my husband, who was on a soap with both of them. Not in their storyline, but anyway. Yeah. Like, you guys catch up, have a loving reunion. I'm going to not do that slash text Tara constantly. With pictures of Lyndon Ashby. I mean, I don't want anything bad to happen to him. I just think this character is a disaster. And it seems maybe like Lyndon Ashby realized at the end of season six, like, I'm going to have to make my own fun. Here we fucking go.
Yep.
But like you said, it could be a sort of weird confirmation bias now that we think he's maybe worth a damn as a human versus this character who is not.
Then it's nighttime. We're at the jazz club, where Jennifer is unconvinced by Michael's claims that Megan still loves him, and he claims she's too young to understand. Moments later, Kyle is pouring drinks as Mario appears beside Michael to tell Kyle he hasn't seen Taylor in days. And Michael looks guilty as hell, which you can see in the visual aids, before confidently stating, Taylor's fine, you know, she always is, and then takes off before they can ask any follow-up questions. And then Peter drives Lexi to a surprise, a condo in the high-rise in Marina Del Rey's titular Marina, which I think is also the building where Amanda lived before she bought the complex all the way back in season one. Peter says his old place had too many bad memories and the complex sucks, and he bought this place in both their names and assumes that Lexi will be thrilled, but she doesn't love him making huge decisions without consulting her. She was happy in the crappy little apartment, getting to know and trust Peter again, but Peter only cares about himself. And the next morning, Coop proudly tells Megan he's one of a dozen doctors in the country interviewing for some fancy job in Philadelphia. If he gets it, they'll both move there. Oh my God, please, both of you, get out of here.
Dear Philadelphia, we'll talk later. Just take this one for the team. Thank you.
So, much like Lexi, Megan is confused that this blonde doctor is making huge moves he assumes she will blindly go along with, but leaving town is the way for both of them to get out of their knee-jerk jealousies, which, more his issue than hers, dude, but go off. And so she wants to know if she decides not to move, would he go without her? He says he would not. Over the restaurant kitchen, Kyle has a letter from Nick and reads it to Mario, clip 11.
It's an apology, Kyle. I'm sorry Taylor's dead. I never meant for it to happen. Nick. That's nuts. I mean, even for a psycho like Nick, that's a really sick joke.
My God. I haven't seen Nick around anywhere. Couldn't be.
You know what? I'm gonna take this to the cops.
Mario, I wanna do some light specials for
Taylor,
the week.
Taylor, you're okay.
Well, of course I am. Kyle, what are you doing here?
Maybe you can tell me. Just got a letter from Nick. It says that you're dead, and he's sorry about it. You know anything about this?
Well, I know that your friend Nick always wanted me dead. Maybe this is just his drinking getting the better of his imagination. I don't know.
Nothing more to it? I mean, you've been gone for 2 days. Where you been?
I was with a friend. A very special friend, and we got a room at the beach. I really don't think you want to know any more than that. So, if you'll excuse me, Mario and I have work to do.
That's just so poochy.
Yep.
The way this letter is direct. Like, says you're dead and he did it. Like, okay. Wow. Like, this isn't even phoning it in.
Right.
It's like messaging a bottling it in. I don't even know. Mm-hmm. Don't hate it, but yikes.
Yeah.
Like, no effort.
No. But here's also what I'm not doing the day I rise from the dead. Work.
Yeah, no.
I might just call and be like, yeah, it turns out I'm not dead. I'll see you in a week. Later, Taylor brings some paperwork to Kyle in his office and is anxious to see he's going through Christine's old stuff from the motel. She thinks the more he dwells on the past, the more unhappy he'll be, since she's caused him the most unhappiness in his life. However, Kyle's not trying to hear it from her and kicks her out, which is when Jennifer rolls up in the hall outside and overhears Taylor claiming to have turned over a new leaf. Jennifer believes Taylor's trying and agrees that Kyle needs to stop wallowing. And Kyle more firmly says he doesn't want to talk to Taylor about anything but business and she should go. And she will, but she still loves him. And when she's gone, Kyle says he knows Nick's weird letter is connected to Christine's time in L.A. Jennifer points out that any phone numbers Christine called will be on her bill. So among Kyle's, Taylor's, and the jazz clubs, there's one they don't recognize. A motel that the receptionist confirms Nick was staying in, but has left. And Kyle doesn't know what Nick was doing in town, but he's gonna find out. And the next morning, Michael catches up with Megan while she jogs on the not beach. She's in a park somewhere. He calls out the callback to their very first meeting jogging and then mentions he heard a terrible rumor. She guesses Jennifer blabbed about Philadelphia and Michael begs her not to do this to him. He's from back east. He knows she'll hate it. She's a warm weather person. Do we even know that Megan is from L.A.? I don't think we know anything about her background other than her time as a sex worker and Josh the Pimp. Remember that guy?
Oh, God, Josh the Pimp.
Mm-hmm.
Now busting tables at the Halfway Cafe, as far as we know. Yeah, I don't think we do. I feel like there was some reference at some point to Josh taking her out of some situation and then turning her out, but sure. I don't remember where they said she was from.
No. Anyway, Megan's only considering moving and Michael is not part of her calculus. So naturally he then grabs her by the face and kisses her real hard. And he dares her to say she felt nothing. And she says that. In fact, he just helped her make up her mind. Over to Peter's as he takes a call from Lexi, and the director thought he was doing something fancy with a split screen that you can see in the visual aids. Chip Chalmers, calm down. This is doing a lot.
Yeah, what is this 976 number bullshit?
Yes.
It's cheesy.
So Lexi's been up all night, and with everything going on in her life, including Amanda lurking in her head, she thinks she's gotten a little sensitive. Peter was just trying to do something nice. Lexi knows, and she wants to make it up with him, to him, with dinner at the new place, and he's in. And at the complex, Kyle comes by Taylor's, despite the fact that his last conversation with her was extremely hostile. She eagerly invites him in to watch Judge Judy. Hilarious, timely reference, but
gorgeous.
He's been to Nick's motel and knows that Nick was in touch with Christine. And Taylor denies knowing anything about that, which is where Kyle should tell her he knows Christine called her, despite the fact that the two of them were openly hostile at the rehearsal dinner, meaning Christine and Taylor, but he doesn't. Maybe he forgot. Maybe the writers forgot. Who knows?
I think that's probably it.
Later, Amanda comes by the practice needing to talk to a friend. Peter is not sure about that word since her dog comment the other day was kind of rough, and she sheepishly apologizes for that and explains why she has come. Clip 12.
I know I lashed out at you. I've been lashing out at everyone. Kyle, too, especially Kyle. It's like there's poison in me. I've never felt like this before. I look in the mirror and I feel sick. It's like I can't stand to be alive. So I just thought maybe you could prescribe something for me.
You don't need pills, Amanda. You need to deal with your problems head on. You gotta call Kyle and have dinner and work it out with him.
No, I can't. It's ruined. I can't face him. I know I've been difficult, but through it all underneath, we're friends. I really need your help tonight. Can you? Please.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Get them back together, please.
Well, yes, of course. But short of that, can anyone take any woman seriously on this show when they say, I don't want to live? Like, in that speech, she was like, it's like I can't stand to be alive. Like, Peter, you're a doctor who occasionally fancies himself a psychiatrist. Like, when someone says that to you, your answer isn't you don't need pills in that bitchy tone. Like,
yeah,
maybe not, but she fucking needs something. Like,
she
Jesus
needs
Christ.
Something. And you are a mandatory reporter, so I don't know. Help her. And yeah. like going to dinner and giving her some booze is not indicated either.
No. But God,
I'm exhausted.
I guess Lexi was not so crazy to be worried about Amanda in that earlier scene, because the next thing we see, she's in a satin nightie picking up a call from Peter, breaking their date. And then we're at the clinic. Taylor stops in to see Michael, who is bitterly reviewing his books. Seems like he has more problems than she does, she says. But he says hers are more interesting.
True.
So true. She tells him the latest. Michael says that if Kyle figures everything out, Taylor just has to deny it. It's the only thing that works in his experience, which... does it usually work? Usually? But Taylor decides he's right and then asks if he's ever noticed people like them get the short end of the stick, which, like, what do you mean people like you, villains? But he grunts that that will change, and she grins that he's her inspiration. And then Amanda and Peter are eating at a seafood place they used to go to when they were married. Sigh. She soulfully tells him how much it means to her that he is still someone she can talk to. And Peter's like, well, about that, clip 13.
Yeah. Amanda, I've always cared for you. And to be quite honest, I sometimes put you above everybody else.
You don't need to do that.
I know, especially right now. Ew. It's wrong because I'm hurting someone that I love very much. And I just can't do it anymore.
No, wait.
Look, Amanda, I'm sorry. This is not your fault. It's my fault. But I'll help you any way I can, but not at Lexi's expense. I'm sorry.
Fuck Lexi, seriously. Who cares?
Don't fuck her.
Yeah, no.
get out of this apartment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, sadly, the opposite occurs. Peter goes straight from dinner to see Lexi there and announce that he loves her and he's hungry for dinner, but dinner's gonna have to wait because they're gonna fuck. And that's it. Let's name our episode MVP.
Amanda.
Yeah.
Just constantly being like, I mean, I know that it's sort of supposed to be expressing almost suicidal and sometimes suicidal ideation, which is not great, but the show is not going to take that seriously. And the effect on everyone around her is to remind them that they are bullshit. So, Amanda.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Jennifer because, I mean, she's making the most of this crush on Billy, I suppose, but also decided to tell Sam some tough truths that whether or not Sam could understand them is not on her. And she was the one who cracked the phone bill thing. I'm sure Kyle never would have gotten that far investigatively without her help. So,
yeah, no, Kyle is dumb. So, yeah, good choice. I mean, if it weren't for the it's Billy of it all, I would have joined you in the Jennifer MVP pool.
Yep. Least valuable player.
Sam, get out. Just get out.
Yes. Marry Jeff. Go on the road with him. Stay on the road. Never come off it. Mm-hmm. I agree. Sam, she's really working my last nerve.
Yep. Same. Next time on Again With This, the Sam Lore Billifer storyline quadrangles narcoleptically on. Dumb Kyle investigates dumbly. Lexi's friend Rory backdoor pilots himself into Amanda's eyeline, and Taylor has a cannoli in the oven. Spoiler, I guess. You might also feel nauseated in the morning if that's the time you choose to check out our visual aids. You'll find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. Join us on Patreon for dozens and dozens and dozens of bonus episodes. And if you join at the $5 level and up, as we said, you can listen to us talk about Garth and Spelling Cast 90210MG instead of listening to it yourselves, which never do that. Do this, againwiththispodcast.com/club for all the details. I'm seat and lap filler Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Unfriendly Advice, Tar Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tar Ariano. And we just don't want you to think of producer David T. Cole as a bad thing. Talk to you next time.
La 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 da.
Hey, Paul.